Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. Welcome on it all to Monday Football Monday here on the SB Nation NFL show, sponsored by DraftKings. Stay tuned because you will hear more about DraftKings and all it has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours. As noted, this is Monday Football Monday on the SB Nation NFL show. Make sure to subscribe to the SB Nation NFL show wherever you access podcasts. We are available on all major podcast platforms. Subscribe, leave a rating, and write a review, or else really is the end of that threat. You can also watch us on the SB Nation NFL YouTube channel. Make sure to subscribe there and like every video, pay the like tag, smash that subscribe button, as content creators are known to say. The dashing debonair and ever stylistic Steven Serta is on the ones and twos here today from Arrowhead Pride. My name is RJ Ochoa from Blogging the Boys, and with me, as always, the two most talented, most creative, most wonderful writers for SBNation.com, Mark Schofield, and apparently the smartest person in the world, according to last week's team activity, JP Acosta. JP, holy crap, dude. That brain of yours is a steel trap for information.
You know, we came in clutch when we needed to. Shout out to the DEI gang getting the number one overall. I was a little worried at first because I knew the answer in my head to how many hearts does an octopus have. But then I started to second guess myself after I raised my hand. So there was like a quick second of like, oh, should I say five or should I say three? I almost said five. I was like three. And that completely changed the outlook, you know? But I had to come in clutch for the game.
For anyone who has no idea what we're talking about, which is literally the entire listening audience.
Yeah.
we had a team activity across SB Nation last week where we were divided into teams. There was some trivia, some gift battles. It was a really fun way to get to know some people that we don't necessarily interact with every day across the digital lunch table. No offense to Mark and JP and Steven, I love all three of you, but it was nice to see some other people. And there was a trivia portion, and JP had all of the answers, although not the pituitary gland. That was me, baby. All right, yeah, that's my gland. Never thought I'd say that. Mark, Bahrain is in the books, and actually right before we had to delay starting this, yeah, this recording and streaming, partly because of me, but also because you had to get a quick blurb out on some breaking Formula One news.
Yeah. This has already been a crazy season, not on the track. On the track's been as expected. Max Verstappen is very, very fast. Off the track though, it's been chaotic. And the latest is there's a report that Mohammed Ben Sulaymin, the FIA president, which is F1's governing body, allegedly interfered in last year's Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, which is the race that's coming up this week. At that race last year, Fernando Alonso was given a 10-second penalty for not serving his 5-second penalty properly. That was handed out after the race. So he was dropped from third to fourth. George Russell was promoted from fourth to third. Allegedly, FIA's president called to intervene, said he wanted the penalty overturned. The best part of this entire thing was the trophy exchange when Russell finally had to give the third place trophy back to Alonso because they did eventually overturn that penalty was hilarious. I wrote about it last year. There were all these gifts going back and forth between the drivers, between the teams. Mercedes recorded this great video of like returning the trophy, like the 6 miles down the road from their factory to Aston Martin's. But yeah, breaking F1 news. It's been crazy this year. Apparently the combine happened last week.
Allegedly,
the NFL combine happened last week. I think that's what we're here to talk about, but I don't know.
It is, but I will plug for anyone who is a fan of Formula One, which is like a billion people, head to SBNation.com, go to our F1 hub. Mark does an incredible job powering all that, but he and JP do an incredible job powering multiple things. I mean, every time I look, y'all have written something that I just never would have expected. They dabble way beyond the NFL. So good job to the two of you. You touched on it, Mark. We are here to react to, discuss postmortem the 2024 NFL Combine. JP, last week we talked about how this event was kind of starting to feel I don't say antiquated or unnecessary. And it kind of lived up to that. So many coaches didn't even attend it. And that's not to diminish the value that it provided, because it was a really instructive part and remains an instructive part of the draft process. But it feels like the major takeaways all have to do with just information that was processed and passed between different parties over the combine, as opposed to the actual on-field results at Lucas Oil Stadium.
So last week I wrote about how to watch the combine as a smarter fan. And one of the things I touched on was how the combine was kind of going out of style. And I think it's because of the access to information that GMs and franchises have. You know, they have GPS tracking. You have all these different ways to kind of test athletes and their skills. So it kind of makes them showing up in shorts and running 40-yard dashes. While it was cool to see Xavier Worthy break that record. That was awesome. It doesn't really, like, if you thought he was fast going in, you knew it wasn't going to change anything. But I think there's still some things that can be gleaned from the combine. It's just, you know, it kind of feels a little bit like the dunk contest in the NBA, where there's so much access to things, so much information, that it kind of has made it go a little bit out of style.
Interesting. Mark, you touched on how you had a lot going on and everybody had a lot going on, and obviously Formula One season starting up. But I don't want to word it like this, but the combine is kind of an event that you can – sort of blitz your way through and catch up on. I mean, it's just, okay, give me all the times, give me all the measurements and things like that. Again, as it relates to the prospects themselves.
Yeah. And a good friend, I know we all know and love Arif Hassan, on his Substack this morning, he put up a piece, is the NFL Combine Dying. And I haven't fully read it yet, but I've read some of it. And I do wonder if we're moving towards an age and an era of the NFL where it matters for maybe under the radar prospects more than anything else, because I think we're getting to the point where the bigger name prospects either won't work out, or will do just a portion of it, or might not even go to it in some cases, or will do the behind the scenes stuff, the medical evals, the team interviews. And for players that might be more under the radar, it's a chance for them to sort of work out, to maybe put down a good 40, put down a good three cone, and sort of make a little draft noise for themselves. Because as JP said, a lot of the data that teams use now isn't at the combine. It's the chip data. It's okay, well, maybe he didn't run the best 40, but we got GPS tracking on him in a game and he ran a 9 route against Team X and it was a blazing 40-yard dash with an incredible 10-yard split, and that's in an actual game. You think back to Cooper Kupp, for example. A lot of people looked at his 40 time, said he wasn't going to be fast enough for the NFL, but the Rams looked at the chip data from the Senior Bowl and said, he's plenty fast. He's exactly what we need. And so I wonder if, as JP called it, antiquated. I think that might be sort of the best way to look at it at this point, or at least get in there for the bigger name prospects. But for some of the under the radar prospects that might not have as much data at their disposal, or the teams don't have enough data on, it's an opportunity for them to make their case to teams.
It is an NFL tentpole event, so there's no way, despite whoever wants to claim that it needs to go away, it provides an opportunity for the NFL to flex its muscle. You know, the NFL's probably thrilled that the combine will do bigger numbers and bigger ratings than LeBron James, you know, hitting 40,000 career points, things like that. So if you think the NFL is doing away with the combine, you're not necessarily connected to reality. But JP, again, we talked about last week how it would be big for certain storylines and certain dominoes to kind of begin to fall. One of the biggest ones has to do with the Chicago Bears. Caleb Williams kind of passed all the tests, and it seems more than safe to assume that he's going to be the number one overall pick. But that leaves Justin Fields in need of a home. There were several reports. Diana Russini of The Athletic had a bunch of them as the weekend was kind of starting in earnest, about how the market might not necessarily be as robust as the Bears anticipated. But the Bears, JP, seem kind of cool about this. They seem kind of like, look, we're not necessarily asking for like a massive steal here. Just, you know, a fair offer, and we'll all be happy. We'll all walk away and be, you know, be on with our eyes.
So I think this comes down to some of the teams that we thought were going to be in on Justin Fields opting to go with a quarterback via the draft, or going with a guy like Russell Wilson. You think about a team like the Falcons, who are more than, according to most reports, all in on Kirk Cousins or draft a quarterback because they have the 8th overall pick. They don't need to draft Justin Fields, or not draft. They don't need to trade for Justin Fields if they can get a guy on a rookie contract, or get a guy like Kirk Cousins, who's a better fit in the Zach Robinson Rams heavy wide zone play action style offense. But then you go to a team like Las Vegas, who was another option for Justin Fields before they hired Luke Getsy, former offensive coordinator. And you think, oh, that seems like a spot for Russell Wilson, who is going to need an offense kind of catered around him, but can still get the ball downfield, which is something that they're going to need. And then you go like Pittsburgh, and it seems like Pittsburgh is going to roll with maybe signing Ryan Tannehill and drafting the guy in day two. I think they love Spencer Rattler. So now you're kind of just like, is Justin Fields willing to be a backup for a year for a guy who maybe has an expiring contract or someone they don't have a lot of faith in? You know, maybe it's a team, I don't know, maybe like Cleveland or something where you get him in there. Deshaun Watson hadn't necessarily played that great, but now it just comes down to, I think, overall kind of changing the scope of Justin Fields is going to be a starter wherever he goes, and more towards Justin Fields might be a developmental backup wherever he goes.
Mark, do you think it's safe to say that free agency in a, you know, dramatic sense starts with Kirk Cousins? He kind of seems like the most important decision will be made by Kirk Cousins, or maybe not most important, most seismic decision.
I mean, I think so. It does seem like, and we're recorded this just hours after it came down that Mike Evans is going back to Tampa Bay. I think that was going to be another sort of big domino to fall here, but it does feel like Cousins, because of the fact that A, quarterbacks move the needle, because of the fact that B, so many teams need quarterbacks, because of how the draft board starts with three teams, 1, 2, 3, Chicago, Washington, New England, that are probably going to look at quarterbacks, if not draft one themselves, although New England's sort of an interesting one in there. Yeah, it seems like Kirk Cousins is that big piece to fall. And I think JP's actually, you know, as he always is right. Atlanta seems like the destination for Kirk Cousins. It seems like the wind's pointed in that direction. I do wonder about Fields in Pittsburgh. I've heard a lot of chatter about that in the past, you know, 48, 72 hours, that might be the landing spot for him. But the Cleveland one is interesting, you know, because we saw, you know, Watson sort of struggle before the injury last year. You know, a lot of beat reporters around the Browns are saying that maybe that would be a destination for Justin Fields. But Cousins going first, I think, is the one that sends this all into motion. And let's not forget, for all of the chatter about how useful is the combine, a lot of stuff happens at night. A lot of stuff goes down at high velocity and at the JW Marriott. And that's when you get a lot of the sort of initial conversations about free agency movement. I remember a couple of years ago when all the Boston beat writers were at high velocity on a random night in Indianapolis wondering what's going to happen tomorrow when it comes out that Brady's actually leaving. You know, because that's when the dominoes start to fall into place. And so it wouldn't surprise me that the Kirk Cousins domino, which we're waiting on falling, has actually already fallen given late night conversations in Indy.
Well, JP, maybe to Mark's point, one football got pushed across the goal line to stick up with, like, kind of, you know, super cheesy talk around here. Relative to Mike Evans, it was reported on Monday morning that he has agreed to return to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on a, correct me if I'm wrong, 2-year, $52 million deal. I believe $35 million guaranteed. That's also seismic, not necessarily as seismic as a franchise quarterback changing destinations, but Mike Evans probably destined for the Hall of Fame, largely in part due to Tom Brady, and playing his entire career with one team kind of just makes it a little bit of a neater box for it to live in. And it keeps the Bucs in a really interesting spot. Certainly if they're able to retain Baker Mayfield, they are the reigning winners of the NFC South. They won a playoff game. They, you know, took the Lions, you know, down to the wire. I mean, the Bucs are maybe not to be forgotten about or overlooked, JP.
Yeah, I think this is a good thing for the Buccaneers, especially with whoever they decide to keep at quarterback. If it's Baker Mayfield, it's fantastic. Obviously, he had the best year of his career with Mike Evans as his receiver. Losing Dave Canales is a big, like, that's a big chip to try and replace. But I think they'll be better overall. They'll be fine. Again, you're in the NFC South. Anything can happen in the NFC South. You might repeat as division winners. You might win four games. That's just the Mad Max division. But I think in terms of the overall landscape, this is another big chip to fall when it comes to the wide receiver class and the wide receiver free agent market. And I think we do this every year with the wide receiver class, like, oh, all these guys are going to be free agents. And then, like, none of them actually hit free agency. Like, T. Higgins got tagged. Mike Evans got a new deal. Michael Pittman Jr. is likely, like, headed for the franchise tag. The best receiver available is probably going to be Calvin Ridley. And even that, it looks like the Jaguars are going to try and keep him around.
I saw you were panicked about this on Twitter.
Because look, you better do it now. And because if you try and wait until the league year starts, people can come in and offer better deals. So it depends on if they have a handshake deal already in hand. But I think we do this a lot with the wide receiver class. Like, oh, everybody's going to hit free agency, and then none of them actually do. So now it's going to leave a lot of teams scrambling.
JP, quickly, just as a refresher, you are a resident Jacksonville Jaguars fan. You're a resident on a lot of things, but the details in which the Falcons would be owed a second-round pick or third-round pick, can you please go through those briefly as they relate to Calvin Ridley?
So the Falcons are already owed a third-round pick because Calvin Ridley finished the year at the Jaguars and also went over 1,000 yards. He would be given a second – they'd be giving a second-round pick to the Falcons if he signs an extension – at this point during the league offseason. If the league year starts and Calvin Ridley hits free agency and the Jaguars then re-sign him after that, then they would still keep Calvin Ridley but only give the Falcons a third-round pick. So they're trying to skirt around the third round, making the third a second, but also trying to keep Calvin Ridley. You also have to pay Josh Allen. There's a lot of stuff that has to happen before the Jaguars free agency can really get going. And those are the two biggest chips.
Interesting. Mark, are you looking down upon the Jaguars for trying to skirt the rules? It's pretty unethical of them in my mind.
I mean, look, what's the old adage? If you're not cheating, you're not trying. I mean,
hey, wow. Spoken like a Patriots fan, Mark.
What else could I say? I mean, I am a Patriots fan, as you said. I can't really sort of, you know, rail about the sanctity of sport and, you know, doing everything by the book when I am a Patriots fan. So.
Wow. Okay. Well, that is the update on Mike Evans. Mark, as someone who parachuted in after Bahrain, when Carlos Sainz did not greet his Ferrari teammates.
Wait. No. Take a step back. They were there. They were all there. There were other angles of his, you know, his teammates. They were there. I know there's a lot of angst around that. There were other angles there. You know, they were there for him. There were like celebrities and stuff in the front row more than anything else. They couldn't get to him. That's how popular Carlos Sainz Jr. is right now.
As you were gearing up for the Grand Prix, I don't even know if that's I don't know what qualifies as a Grand Prix, but that's a conversation for a different day. What couldn't escape you? What could you not escape rather from the NFL Combine? I mean, what was annoying your notifications, your alert system, whatever the case would be?
A couple of things. Caleb Williams being asked if he's afraid to compete, like to start his podium session. That was certainly, you know, couldn't escape that one. JJ McCarthy, the rise of JJ McCarthy has been fascinating to watch. And then he puts down one of the best three cones at the entire combine. Like JJ McCarthy, slot receiver. I don't know. I mean, I'm just throwing it out there. Obviously Worthy's 40 was very impressive. What Mims did running that at that size, I'm not surprised that he came up with a little bit of a hamstring injury. A man that size should not be able to move that fast. And that's the other thing that always sticks out, and we're reminded of it all the time, but especially this time of the year. These are incredible athletes. Like they're different. They are absurdly different. To be 6'7", 340, and post that kind of 40 time, that's just unheard of. And we sort of see this every year, but that was a big reminder that these are different kinds of people.
JP, as you were, I would say knee deep, but you were like Walter and Jesse in the like hazmat suits deep in combine coverage. What was your main takeaway? What, you know, was it a certain prospect? Was it a lack of something on a certain prospect? Was it the antiquatedness of the whole event?
A couple things stood out. And the first thing is if you need an offensive lineman or a wide receiver, this is the draft to get one because there are a lot of them and a lot of good ones. We talked about Amarius Mims hitting a 5.07 40 at 340 pounds is so much beyond comprehension that like what I don't know how to put that in context, you know, like that. What else do you even say? About that, he had a 1.78 10-yard split, which for comparison, like that's faster than most receivers at the combine. But you think about Amarius Mims, started only 8 games at Georgia, but you see the athleticism. He carries 340 really well. Joe Alt from Notre Dame had a fantastic day. He looked a little stiff at doing the drills at the right tackle spot, which of course he's been a career left tackle and is kind of given a lot of people pause as to why the Chargers shouldn't take him at five. But you think about guys like him, Talis Fuaga had a great day. Olufashanu, who kind of pulled up after his first 40, will test at Penn State's pro day. He's going to be a major factor. Troy Fatanu looked so good in the drills. He looked like a plug and play 10-year starter at guard or tackle. Tanner Bordellini, the Washington center, had, I believe, a 4.28 short shuttle, which is again, these guys are moving so fast and so quickly. Yeah, Tanner Bordellini hit a 4.28 short shuttle, which is close. It's getting real close to Jason Kelsey's 4.14, but he's also a center who can move, get out there. And in the receiver class, I mean, you just pick your poison. You know, Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr. both did not test, so that kind of left the door open for Roma Dunze. And he performed really, really well. 4.45, 40, looked smooth, incredibly smooth during the drills. Xavier Worthy, of course, I mean, you run a 4.21, that's going to get a lot of guys on your radar. You knew he was fast coming in. He's going to be an interesting case because he is incredibly fast, but we have rarely seen guys who are his size at 160 pounds, 165, get drafted in the first round. I think he's more of a high second. You draft him at the beginning of day two if you want some easy speed, acceleration, separation. Ricky Pearsall from Florida, fantastic day. He's a guy that I went back and watched on film before the combine. Smooth dude, incredibly smooth. And then he busts off a 4.440. That's going to help him a lot. I think when we talked about GPS versus 40, Keon Coleman, real interesting day. Runs a 4.6240, which is unexpected. I was a little concerned, but then busts off looking incredible in the gauntlet drill while running 20 miles an hour during the gauntlet. Like that was the fastest time of any receiver through the gauntlet drill. The 10-yard split was incredible. That's kind of what he does as a receiver. He is built on 10-yard explosions and bursts, and he's a game speed over play speed guy. His stock is going to be incredibly interesting coming out of this, especially with the increase of, you know, tracking data. So if you need a receiver, you need an offensive lineman, this is the draft to get one.
It's a great time to be Keon Coleman in that sense, in that Puka Nacua is fresh on everyone's minds. Having success, or having the Rams had success from the tracking data that you mentioned, and that being a part of the evaluation. And so that serving as a legitimate sample to lean on and cite as precedent in that sense. You mentioned Jason Kelsey really briefly, JP. We're streaming / recording this at about noon Eastern on Monday. And he tweeted out, right? He tweeted on Monday morning that he was going to be holding a press conference later on this afternoon. So it's quite possible that somebody is listening to or watching this after the fact. So predictions for what we see from Jason Kelsey, Mark.
I think this is a retirement announcement. I mean, in recent years, he's announced he's coming back. Like he mentioned no keg. That was last year, right? Like he posted the keg video.
As JP chugs a gallon of water in that moment.
There you go. Nailed it. Perfect timing there. This just feels like the retirement announcement. You know, there are rumblings I've seen on social media that Travis is in town. Obviously, I think if Travis is in town, that's another sign, another indication that this is a retirement announcement. I mean, an incredible career. Hall of Fame career.
Totally.
I mean, at this point in his career, he was still top 2-3 centers in the NFL. I mean,
I would venture and say maybe one,
maybe still one. I mean, that's just it. He's so good at what he does. And look, the past couple of years, what's been the dominant conversation with respect to one single play design, the tush push, that's him. I mean, it starts with him.
He I mean, I don't know that anybody dreams, you know, grows up dreaming to play center. Right. I mean, it's just something that happens to see over time. But he has had the dream sports professional career in that he's played his entire career for one team. And it was an incredibly sports starved, sports hungry, sports chaotic team. And he was a part of the team that delivered the first title to that team. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like it's a statue type of player, athlete person. And he's this like incredible persona. And he's happened to have that displayed in the right kind of ways, JP. I'm with Mark in assuming it's a retirement thing. I assume you think that as well.
I think it's a retirement. And if it is, how improbable a Jason Kelce career is should be discussed a lot. He was a sixth-round pick. He played in the NFL for, I believe, 13, 14 years at 265 pounds as a center. You don't get that a lot. And you think about how often he changed the game. We talked about that short shuttle and that 414 short shuttle and being able to pull and being able to get out to the second level. That's something that Jason Kelce kind of helped change. I think when it's all said and done, he's going to be in that discussion for greatest center of all time. I think he is – he embodies, like you said, he embodied the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, we were in Vegas for the Super Bowl. I saw a lot of Jason Kelce jerseys in Vegas for the Super Bowl. It's not like we saw like Jalen Hurts or A.J. Brown. It was Jason Kelce. He is the Philadelphia Eagles. He is – it's just
he's again, the best player from this era. There's no doubt about it. He's the best player from this era of Eagles football.
Yeah, he is the best player of this era of Eagles football. He's going to be he's a shoe-in Ring of Honor statue guy. And like I said, he is one of the greatest Philadelphia Eagles of all time.
What's that statue going to look like? Because I want him in the Mummers costume from their Super Bowl rally.
I do too.
That's better than him like hiking a football.
Yeah, you know I mean? Or like, you know, just like putting the helmet on or something. I want the Mummer.
Well, also statue. I think you're coming at it from like a novelty standpoint, and you should be, but also because of what it represents. Because the first question is, why is he wearing that? Oh, he wore it at the Super Bowl parade. You know what I mean? Like it immediately like tells an awesome story. So look at us. You know, we're all kind of on the same page. You know, high fives all the way around. Mark, JP touched on how deep this offensive line class is, and that is kind of music to everybody's ears. I think it was Mitchell Schwartz who tweeted at the beginning of this past season how there was just this incredible offensive line shortage in the NFL. And so, I mean, the NFL is incredibly calculated, but they're also incredibly lucky. So, like, what a gift for all these, like, offensive line starving teams that this massive influx of players is coming in to help kind of recalibrate things and reset the status quo.
Yeah, and think back to one of the earliest conversations we had this season. It was about the lack of offensive line depth, the lack of offensive line talent. And it was because, look, as we sort of alluded to earlier, it's hard to find people that size that can do the things you need to do to play offensive line in the NFL and to have a long career doing it. I mean, again, these to be 6'7", 340 and run like Mims did, like it puts a lot of strain on the body. So to have this kind of class coming in to sort of restock the offensive line position in the National Football League, it's huge. It's absolutely huge because, you know, so much of what happens offensively in these ideas that like scoring is down and offenses are struggling starts with the players up front. Like if you don't have good offensive lines, you're going to struggle. If you don't have three good offensive linemen up front, four good offensive linemen up front, you're going to struggle. And so these teams at the top of the board, at the middle of the round that need offensive linemen, they're excited to see what we saw this week in Indy.
JP, who was the biggest loser of the combine? We've been too optimistic. We've been throwing out too much love. Like, and it doesn't have to be a prospect. It can be a team or whatever the case may be. Maybe it's Justin Fields because his stock might be a little bit lower than was originally anticipated. But who's the biggest loser in your mind?
The biggest loser of the combine is probably – I hate to kind of generalize it, but it's any quarterback needy team that's not in the top 10. It's looking more and more like JJ McCarthy is going to go top 10 from all the rumblings that came out of Indianapolis. Just, I know we kind of cliche it, but I think scouts and executives love the fact that he did not lose a lot of games at Michigan. You know, that's going to be a big thing that comes up. I thought he had a fine combine day. I thought there were some throws that like, yeah, it looks like what JJ McCarthy's good at doing. And there were some where it's like he can't really – his footwork is so messed up, he can't really hit throws to his left. It coming in at 219, doing the short shuttle on or the three cone the time that he did, and then throwing – basically kind of setting that status quo of what we thought JJ McCarthy is. I think everything coming out of that is there are going to be four quarterbacks that come out of the that go into the draft in the top 10. I think that's definitely going to happen.
So, Mark, you would know, again, our resident Patriots fan and fan of, you know, a lack of ethics. If we do presume it's Caleb Williams, Drake May, is it Jaden Daniels? Like your opinion today, obviously you reserve the right to change, but Jaden Daniels is the pick today?
I think so, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels.
Okay,
and then Drake May.
It
seems like quarterback is what they're going to do because, you know, there's been some thought, and we've talked about it as well, that, look, you know, you're looking at QB3 and you could get the best non-quarterback on the board. New England's going to go with a veteran and things like that. It seems like the conversation shifted around New England. They're going to go quarterback. I think the more interesting discussion is which quarterback would be available at three. Because one of the things that I think we've all heard coming out of Indianapolis is there is a lot of smoke behind the idea that it's Jaden Daniels QB2 and that Drake May might be the quarterback that falls. Now, whether you agree with that or not, that's up to you. That's up to your own evaluation. But everything that I've been told, everything that people were in Indianapolis were telling me was Daniels in a two or maybe even QB1 on some boards is legitimately in play for a number of teams.
I believe Dan Orlovsky on Friday tweeted out that Daniels is his QB1, just to your point, Mark, about that being said.
There's a lot of discussion around it. I mean, I had some people tell me back as far as like October that Daniels in QB1 was a legitimate thing.
So, okay, let's presume then it is. Whoever goes 2 and 3, whoever is Zach Wilson and Trey Lance in 2024, that would – you know, lead us to assume that the Arizona Cardinals are kind of the biggest.
Run to the podium, turn in the card. It's Marvin Harrison Jr.
But what if it isn't? I don't know if that's where you're going to be.
I do not think the Cardinals would trade out of that fourth overall pick because Marvin Harrison Jr. is still on the board.
No, you run to the podium.
But there's like a small, it's like that Doctor Strange meme from Avengers where it's like, there's one chance out of a billion possibilities, maybe they do trade out. If they get like a Godfather offer from a team like the Falcons who want to trade up and go get a quarterback, or a team like, I don't know, maybe the Giants who want to trade up or do something. You know, I don't think it would be very smart to trade out of that pick because Marvin Harrison Jr. is the best wide receiver prospect I have seen maybe since, it's been a while. But there's a possibility. I don't think it's a big possibility, but that is an option that the Cardinals have. I don't think it'd be wise, but
okay. So then to flip the conversation, you answered Biggest Loser, JP. Mark, live in the hypothetical that you're so against for whatever reason, whatever vendetta you have against the Cardinals.
You got a chance to go get a great wide receiver and put it with Kyler Murray.
Say they trade out. The biggest winner becomes the beneficiaries of Marvin Harrison Jr. not going at pick. Because we all agree that somebody trading up at four is for a quarterback, right? Trading up for Marvin Harrison Jr., then the Cardinals are just picking him themselves. So that being said, who's the biggest hypothetical beneficiary of that, Mark, from Marvin Harrison Jr. slipping past the fourth overall pick?
I mean, the Chargers at five?
It'd be so funny if he wound up with Jim Harbaugh.
But you get Keenan Allen – and Marvin Harrison Jr. with Justin Herbert, and you immediately like turbocharge that offense.
None of us want to fall for the Chargers again. But isn't that the way the Chargers get us?
We all went on the record a couple of weeks ago and said, we're not going to do this again. But if they get Marvin Harrison Jr.,
if somehow the Cardinals trade out and don't pick Marvin Harrison Jr. and the Chargers are just sitting there like, I guess we'll take him.
Fine.
Watch me work. Okay. Watch me connect these dots and line up, you know, all these breadcrumbs. Who's the one person who's hyping up and gassing up JJ McCarthy more than anybody?
It's Jim Harbaugh.
Okay. So, and who stands to be the biggest beneficiary of JJ being that fourth quarterback?
So you're saying that Harbaugh is basically trying to put this all together?
Harbaugh is stuffing the ballots. Harbaugh is saying, all right, guys, seriously, JJ is – tell me that this is impossible. I mean, we know that Harbaugh is elite at this kind of stuff, and he is, again, convincing somebody – anybody that JJ, because we've talked about it before, right? Like four quarterbacks ago, picks 1, 2, 3, 4. That in order for Marvin Harrison Jr. to fall to Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers and give them the chance of everybody falling back in love, which you just talked about, Mark, they need that to happen. Who stands to gain the most from JJ McCarthy going 4 overall? Jim Harbaugh and the LA Chargers. Tell me that I didn't just blow your minds. I dare y'all. You can't.
That's pretty impressive. It's pretty impressive, RJ. I will say.
I do think there's one team that's in the top 10 that hasn't really been talked about quarterback-wise that could either trade up or could be a sneaky Justin Fields team, and that's the New York Giants. I think they would be an interesting, you know, I don't think it'd be Fields because I think they're kind of lame ducking Daniel Jones for the year and then letting him walk or cutting him after next year. But that's kind of the perfect spot for a guy like Jaden Daniels if he falls, or a JJ McCarthy, where you can go and sit behind the lame duck and then you go draft a lineman or something next year because you already have the quarterback and you're not trying to force yourself into a quarterback.
It's funny you say that the Giants are a Justin Fields destination. It was their pick that the Bears, or it was the Giants who the Bears traded up with in 2021 to get him. So kind of a fun twisting of fate if that ultimately is what winds up happening. I don't know how, if you're the Giants, you can trade for Justin Fields and you have to pick up his fifth-year option. So like you're committing big-time quarterback money in the here and now to Daniel Jones and in the future to Justin Fields. Like I agree with you that the situation makes sense from a football standpoint, but contractually they're just kind of up against it right now. So, Mark, you gave me props and said that you believe that this is a possibility. Tell me Jim Harbaugh isn't here to like cause hijinks. That's what we're all hoping for, right? Yeah.
I mean, we're all hoping that Harbaugh brings the chaos. We're all excited for it. And yeah, if he pulls the strings Machiavellian style and gets Marvin Harrison Jr., bravo. And I will fight every urge, every little bit that's telling me don't do it again. And I'll probably fall for the Chargers this summer.
Those preseason passes from Justin Herbert to Marvin Harrison Jr. are going to set the internet on fire.
Yeah.
The true social media quarterback will finally arrive when that happens.
Look, the Chargers social media team is tremendous. I mean, just imagine their schedule release video with Harbaugh this year already. I mean,
they will have a great bit about Harbaugh and Marvin Harrison Jr. And there will be something. I mean, it will be just incredible.
Did they go anime again?
I think they have to. I mean, it's kind of their thing now.
I think it's their thing now. You got to go anime.
I think it is. Yeah.
JP, I saw a friend of mine who was asking for television shows to watch, and they were told to watch some Titan anime show. Is this something you can
Attack on Titan? It is one of my favorite animes of all time. It's fantastic. It's an incredible story. The animation is amazing. The music in the show is phenomenal. And I think the voice acting was really good over the course of four seasons. It did get kind of drawn out a little bit to the end because they had the final season part one, then the final season part two, then the final episode part one, then the final episode part two. But I sat there and watched all of it. It was fantastic. They landed the plane perfectly. It's an incredible story to sit back and go back through and start from episode one. So highly recommend.
Mark, do you have any passionate thoughts or takes on this?
I actually do not. I was wondering, though, if you had gone to the new revamped McDonald's with the upside down that is an anime.
McDonald's, yes.
Yeah.
I have.
You have?
Yeah, I have.
I haven't gone yet. I got to get one of those cups, though.
I haven't gotten the little sauce though. I haven't gotten that one.
What do y'all? This is one over my head. I need
to. So it's a tribute to anime because in a lot of anime shows they'll show a McDonald's, but they put the arches upside down.
For rights reasons.
So okay. Rather than litigate over it, McDonald's has done something brilliant. They've leaned into it, and so they've got this sort of like campaign out with the upside down arches and everything.
Wow,
like,
they have anime. Cups.
Yeah, they got cups. They get everything.
Okay, well, what's your I guess while we're here, what's y'all's go-to McDonald's meal? Because I haven't had a McDonald's burger in like 15 years, and I'm okay with it. So,
I'm a McNuggets person.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. 20-piece. Like, I'm a 20-piece guy. Let's go.
A 20-piece and maybe a McDouble. But yeah.
Okay. Glad to know we're all on the same page. Yeah. To close things out, and maybe we're on the same page or not, the most chaotic thing that emerged from the 2024 NFL Combine. Chaotic good, chaotic bad, chaotic evil. It's up to you, JP.
The most chaotic thing to emerge from the NFL combine is Tom Brady.
It's a veteran move, repeating the question while you think. Good job.
Yeah, yeah. Tom Brady running the 40 again. And then Kevin O'Connell was actually on TV. He was talking during NFL Network. He was like, yeah, I could probably do the 40 now and like at 4.97, which is really impressive considering he's an NFL coach. But then you go back and look at his combine results, and I think he ran a 4.65. Kevin O'Connell's sneaky good athlete.
Sneaky good athlete.
Sneaky good athlete, Kevin O'Connell. I'm going to pull
Sneaky good
up.
Coach. give KOC some more respect. Like, this man doesn't get it at all, and I don't understand why. He deserves Coach P over Brian Daboll.
As a quarterback, Kevin O'Connell ran the 40-yard dash in 4.61 and had a 4.38 20-yard shuttle. That's pretty good. That's pretty good for a guy who is now the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. Like, I think I'd like to see him do the combine. Maybe he'd have better numbers than some of his players.
Okay, that was a good answer. Mark, most chaotic thing.
I think there are two that sort of stick out to me. One, the Caleb Williams question. You know, because, like, for those that don't know, there was a question asked of him that basically, like, why are you scared to compete? It was the first question that he got because he wasn't doing the drills and things like that. And it touched off a firestorm among NFL media. Like, and it, you know, brought back to bear the sort of tension between sort of NFL writers and fantasy writers, because it was a fantasy writer that asked that question. There's a lot of people mad and afraid that people won't get credentialed for the combine going forward. So I think that was a little bit of chaos. From my perspective, have not gone this year. Seeing a lot of the writers that I'd sort of put in my age bracket coming to the realization that the combine is a young person's game now. Like, you can't stay out. And I'd already realized this last year. Like, there were a lot of times go out to dinner, everybody heads to Prime, and I'm like, look, it's midnight, I gotta go. That 6:30 alarm is gonna hit pretty early. Seeing a lot of the writers in my sort of demographic coming to that realization on social media, being like, I can't do this anymore, I'm too old for this. That was a bit jarring. It was a bit chaotic for me to observe, having already come to that conclusion myself.
Wow, that really does hit hard, Mark.
And
I'm glad you
I mean, for example, Arif, right? I love Arif. And he said that, look, one night he just couldn't do it. And he's like, I went home at midnight because I needed 6 hours of sleep. Like, staying out till like 4:30 and then getting up at 6:30. You can't do that too many nights in a row.
I mean, dude, you're acting like midnight, like going home at midnight is like this, like, you know, shame. I mean, like, midnight is late. I mean, you know, like,
but it's early at Indy. Like,
I'm just saying,
when, like, you're sitting there at, like, you know, at Prime and you start seeing the NFL players drift in around midnight, 12:15, 12:30, you're like, look, I gotta go. That's when it hits you. That's when it hits you that you're old.
Well, that's when you go to McDonald's and you get the WC.
No, but there's a, like,
you refill your
Steak and Shake right across the street from Prime. Like, that's where you go.
That's a vet move. You went personal as far as chaos is concerned. I'm going to do the same. Wasn't in Indianapolis, but if I had been, it would have been tough, because I'm really, really, really mad at the Dallas Cowboys. I feel like we're on the verge of the longest offseason of my life, which would be great for content. And so I'd be grateful in one respect. But I am now, and I would hope that my words mean something to each of you, I am now legitimately concerned that the Dak Prescott extension won't be coming. I'm now legitimately concerned that this is no longer just posturing through the media or just negotiating through the media. This all happened to happen right before. I don't know if you saw this, either of you. There was a photo of Dak got a new haircut and he has a goatee now. I mean, like, Dak is like ready for the villain role. And
Turn is here.
Yeah, like, he is going to own them. I mean, he already does, but I am very, very terrified at the people who have the keys to my favorite team. It's a really unsettling sort of feeling. So,
He looked like a mall cop.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, they are not handling any of this well, and that means I'm not handling any of it well. So, yeah, but at least the content will be good.
Another chaotic thing that happened at the Combine is Kool-Aid McKinstry being able to correctly guess every flavor of Kool-Aid while not being able to see which flavor it was. Incredibly impressive, even though, like, you know, his name is Kool-Aid. He should know that, but it was still impressive to watch.
Yeah, a lot of people don't lean into that. Like, again, to make it personal, when Taco Charlton was drafted by the Cowboys, he was like, I don't really like tacos. It's like, dude, come on.
What?
I mean, you're going to be asked about this. Like, you know, it's got to become your thing. Like, you know, so, okay. Steven, if you could join us and offer your takes on the combine. Three things, Steven. Your takes on the combine, a review of Dune 2, which, as I understand, you watched three times this past weekend. And, of course, if you could hand out the MFW MVP.
Combine, I knew it was a loaded wide receiver class, and it just seems like all these guys just continue to stand out and prove why it's such a deep wide receiver class. So I'm excited about that. It's my favorite position in the NFL. Dune Part 2, absolutely amazing. Yes, I did see it three times this weekend. It was a lot of time. The third time.
Rank the viewings, like from best to worst for us.
I think my second viewing was my favorite because there was so many like little details that I didn't catch the first time because there's so much to digest. And then The third one was kind of last minute, like went with a couple of friends who decided they wanted to go. And so it was a good time, but I was like kind of tired. And like,
it was your J Prime at midnight. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Like I've done this enough times this weekend. But no, it's incredible. And if you like sci-fi and just big, bold, ambitious stories, like it's everything you could ever ask from like a movie theater experience. So highly encourage everyone to go see it. For the MF double MVP, I think I am gonna go with JP, specifically for how excited he got when talking about Attack on Titan, because that's the kind of energy I was bringing to Dune Part 2 this weekend. So I really appreciate that.
I knew as soon as you said Titan anime, I was like, oh yeah, let's do this. I'm ready. I was ready. I was preparing myself for it. But yes, thank you for the MF double MVP award. I would love to recommend any more animes or any more Disney related things. Would love to do any of those. If anybody has any anything they want to get recommended, I am here.
Two things, JP. One, if you have to thank Titan member person, who would it be for this award?
If I had to thank a character from Attack on Titan, I would thank Captain Erwin Smith, because he has the most incredible speeches and motivational quotes in almost all of anime. He is an easy motivator because everybody is getting sent to die.
Okay. Well, to end it on a positive note, because that was kind of negative, Steven, I don't think you're aware of this, but JP's favorite Pixar movie is Cars. And I recently watched that for the first time, and it kind of stunk. But this is, Mark, you'll understand this as the father of human beings. My cross to bear is that my son loves this movie. So he is all obsessed with like Cars in general, but he now really, really, really likes this movie. So this movie that I find to be average, of course, is one of his favorite movies of all time. So now I'm just cursed to have to watch it over and over and over again. What the hell?
Your son knows ball.
Your son knows ball, man.
That's a good note to end on.
Maybe you just got to rewatch it.
Finally. It's not great, Steven. Don't pretend, Steven.
No,
don't do
no,
it.
No, no. We're not ending like that.
It's so boring.
You can't end like that. Cars is phenomenal. What are we doing here?
It's average. So is Ratatouille.
It is amazing. Wait, what? Come on! Like, what is happening right now?
Let's just leave. I don't have anything.
We can't do this.
Okay. You know what's great? Toy Story is great. A Bug's Life is great. You know, Wreck-It Ralph. Not a Pixar production, but it's great. Those things are all solid and all better than Cars and
Wreck-It Ralph
and Ratatouille.
That's a horrendous take.
How does he control the hair? The hair makes no sense to be like a robotic, like Krang body for the chef to use.
Applying logic to a movie about a rat that can cook.
Yeah.
I'm
willing to suspend reality to a certain length, but not that far. I can't do it.
So you're suspending reality for a character
Don't
games.
Make me smite Attack on Titan. All right. I think that show's cool right now. Don't make me put it in the box. So, because I will.
Wreck-It Ralph? Wreck-It Ralph is just an okay movie.
Steven, are the resident cinema expert. Your thoughts on Cars, Ratatouille, and Wreck-It Ralph as we leave?
I mean, they're fine for what they are. They're not things that I don't have children, so it's not something that I revisit a ton.
Okay.